4CRB 89.3 FM, your radio station.
And a very good morning to you. John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, back with you for another program of The Law and You right here on 4CRB this Tuesday morning. As always, your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock daylight saving time. All we ask you to do is get on that telephone early. 55208888 is the number. That number again, 55208888. And as we say every week, if you live south of the Tweed River, don't forget that you need to put 07 in front of the number, but otherwise you'll get straight through. And before I go to Steve, who's just waiting online there at the moment, a couple of weeks ago, Colin rang with a query in relation to stamp duty, which I tried to answer very quickly before we went off air last week. So, Colin, I don't know whether you actually... whether you actually got the information. I did try and ring your number, but there wasn't any answer. And basically, the answer to your question is that you must move into any property purchased as your principal place of residence in Queensland within 12 months of the date of settlement, and you then must reside in the property for 12 months. And if you fail to fulfil both those conditions, then you need to speak to the OSR because they will impose additional stamp duty based on the failure to satisfy the conditions that apply in relation to the provision of that principal place of residence concession. So I hope that provides the answer for you. But we say good morning to Steve. G'day, Steve. How are you?
Not so bad, John. How's yourself?
Very well indeed. Thanks. How can I help?
I've heard you talk about the Consumer Protection Law before on the show.
Yes.
And the Competition and Consumer Act of 2010, which superseded the previous Trade Practices Act.
Yep.
The rights of consumers if a product develops a fault.
Yes.
And it's the seller's responsibility to either repair, replace, refund. But you also said there are some grey areas in it as well.
Well, the grey...
My position is... What is the position when a product develops a fault, in this case it's a pool chlorinator, and it is still within the supplier's manufacturer's express warranty, and to be told by the seller that the manufacturer has gone into voluntary liquidation and its assets sold to a competitor, so it's still trading but under a different banner, or still a different, same name but a different management.
Yes.
And as a result, the original warranty can no longer be honoured.
My recollection, and Steve, I haven't looked at this legislation for a while because it's not within the area that I practice in on a day-to-day basis, but my recollection is that it is actually the seller who is liable, not the manufacturer. So the person you bought the product of is the one who's liable, and the fact that the manufacturer has gone into liquidation, whatever, is irrelevant to the requirement of the person who sold you the product to honour the warranty in relation to it, and that includes the warranty under the consumer protection legislation. So I would be telling the person that, you know, whatever's happened with the manufacturer is not your problem, and that you require the fault remedied or the chlorinator replaced, whatever the position may be. And if they fail to do that, then you very well may look need to look at bringing an application under the Consumer Protection legislation through QCAT. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought this would be the case, but I just wanted some reassurance that this is the right avenue to go along. Well, I haven't actually taken it back yet, but preempting what may happen
I think
well, thank you very much, John. You've been very helpful with all that.
No trouble at all, Steve. All the very best. And the time on 4CRB has just passed 23 minutes to 10. That's 23 minutes to 11, daylight saving time. The Law on You is the program, 55208888, that number if you're needing some free legal advice today, just like Noel. G'day, Noel. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks, John.
That's good.
That was a good question.
Sorry?
Next week, clarify whether you're right or whether you... If that's the rules, that's a pretty heavy one against retailers.
It is. You're quite right.
So if it is, definitely would love to know.
All
anyway,
right.
My question is about body corporate.
Sure.
And how you get rid of ones who are charging too much and taking the insurance premiums. When I say charging too much, including premiums, $10,000 versus, say,
sorry, Noel, you're breaking up a bit. Can you move? You're obviously on a mobile,
yeah,
are you?
Move.
If you maybe can move to an area where you've got slightly better reception. But if I can just sort of repeat what I think you're
saying. How about now?
Yes, that's not going.
I know where to go. Closer to the base station.
Right, okay.
That's the problem of these phones.
Ah, right, fair enough. So as I understand your question, yeah, that's fine. So you're
about body corporates.
Yes.
I'm about to hopefully be elected to the committee.
Yep.
This month.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that the body corporate, that it was my idea to put them in based on a Yellow Page ad, haven't produced the goodies.
Mm-hmm.
And two, keep putting up the fees and the extra expenses.
Right.
And
well, that should
I
all be contained within the budget.
Insurance policies to their advantage.
Yeah, well, that should, firstly, in relation to the levies that are being charged, there should mm-hmm. be a budget that's set.
No, it's not the levies. This is the fee charged by the body corporate.
Oh, their management fee.
Yes.
Well, their management fee would be set by their contract, so they should have an agreement with you which says...
No, it runs out in February.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then you should be getting some quotes off alternative body corporate managers to see what they will charge and see who's providing the best value for money.
Okay, I've already got those.
Yes. And as to
I've got one that stands out from the other two.
Yes, okay, but just make sure that you're not paying peanuts for the services of monkeys. That's the only thing you need to worry about. And
if
with
it
the insurance...
goes ahead, I would go and have a look at their office to see what it looks like.
And then with
the
insurance...
body corporate manager.
Yeah, well, with the insurance, again, you can use a broker to get the best quote they can for your insurance, so you can shop your insurance around to see that you can get the best price. And that's a very common thing to do. All businesses do that. They use a reputable insurance broker, and they will put the business out to several insurance companies, come back to you and normally say, well, these are three quotes we've received from A, B and C, and you can then make a decision based on which one of those represents the best value for money in terms of the cover they give and the reputation of the insurer for dealing fairly with people in relation to claims. All right,
then. You're right there. I come from an insurance background.
Oh, good on you. Well, you should know.
Corporate insurance really is a limited market.
Yes.
I could possibly go direct to London my contacts.
Well,
I work there.
That's an option then. All right, then.
And we can get the commission. Yep, that's the answer.
Okay, Noel, all the very best.
Good. Thanks, John.
Bye now. And the time is just past 19 minutes to 10 right here on 4CRB. That's 19 minutes to 11 south of the border. 5520888, the phone number if you're needing advice today. As we say, g'day to Colin. G'day, Colin. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you.
That's good.
What I wanted to find out is I'm going into a low-care nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to put all my financial affairs in my daughter's hands, and I just wondered how do I go about that?
Right, so what you basically want to do is get your daughter to look after these things for you, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yes, well what you should do then, Colin, would be to grant to your daughter an enduring power of attorney.
Right.
And that would be for financial matters. Which means she could deal with your financial issues, and I would suggest that you would also have her appointed as your attorney for personal and health matters too, so that if decisions have to be made in relation to your care, then she will be able to make those decisions on your behalf.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing I was after, yeah.
So what I would recommend you do is if you have a solicitor who deals in this area, go and have a chat to them. One of the things that I always say to clients when looking at a power of attorney is it's ideal if you can appoint more than one person, because if anything happens to the person you've appointed, then there may be no one who can act in the alternative, and then someone might have to bring an application through the Office of the Adult Guardian to be appointed as the administrator of your financial affairs and your guardian for health and personal matters. So it's a very good idea to do that. And the other thing too, which I always say unapologetically to my clients, is that I like to be assured that they have absolute trust in the child that they're appointing, if they're only appointing one child, because bear in mind that if you lose capacity, your daughter could do whatever she likes in relation to your finances. So it's a very, very important role. And I'm sure in the overwhelming majority of cases, well, I know in the overwhelming majority of cases, children always do the right thing. But I have, over my many years of experience, seen a few cases where that has not occurred, with disastrous outcomes for the donor of the power of attorney. So reminds me of that sticker I see on the back of cars from time to time, Colin. Always be nice to your children, because one day they'll choose your nursing home.
Okay.
All right then.
Okay, thanks very much. Thanks for your help.
No trouble. All the very best. And the time is 16 minutes to 10 right here on 4CRB. 5520888, The Law and You is the program. It's your opportunity to get free legal advice, but only up until 10 o'clock this morning, or 11 o'clock daylight saving time. So if you're needing some advice, please get on that telephone right now. 5520888 is the phone number. And we say good morning to Betty. G'day, Betty. How are you?
Morning, John. I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Very well indeed. Thanks.
Good. What I was ringing about is, now, if I was to stand as, now I've lost the word. My daughter is considering buying a house with her children.
Oh, you're so thinking about going guarantor.
Mm-hmm. Guarantor. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a widow living on my own. Mm-hmm. If I suddenly happened to go to a nursing home, how would that affect the, if I did go guarantor for her?
Right, well, look, going guarantor is a very serious thing, because you obviously put your assets at risk in doing so. Yeah. So it would depend on what was required for the security. So there are two aspects to it, Betty. The first one is, if the bank or the financier, as part of the security and as part of your guarantee, says, well, we want a collateral mortgage over your home, then that will obviously affect you in terms of selling your home and being able to go into a nursing home. So that's the first issue. The second issue is that if the bank doesn't require that guarantee, but your daughter was to get into financial trouble, or there was a matrimonial breakdown, or her partner, you know, they run a business and she's a guarantor on his business and the business fails. There's a whole raft of issues that can really go very, very wrong in this sort of a situation. So it's a matter that I think you need to treat with treat very seriously. I would be recommending that you get you know, some sound financial and legal advice before embarking upon what you're thinking of doing. It very well may, as I said to the previous caller, with enduring powers of attorney, look, it all very well may go fine and no problem at all. Your daughter may never get into financial trouble and the guarantee may eventually just be released or whatever. But over the years, I have seen these situations go badly wrong and resulting in elderly people losing their homes because they've given a guarantee. So it's something that you really, you know, all I can say to you is just, I'd just like you to really get some sound advice and think very carefully about it before you do embark upon that role.
Well, thanks very much for
all
that,
right,
John.
Then, Betty.
Thank you.
All
have
the
a
very
nice
best.
Day.
And you too.
Thank you.
5520888888 is that number. If you live south of the Tweed River, as I said earlier, don't forget to put 07 in front of the number. Laura and you, you'll get free legal advice right here on 4CRB, but only up until 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock daylight saving time. Good morning, Jan. How are you? Hello? Jan, are you there? Hello, Jan. I think Jan may have gone away from the phone because we can hear the radio in the background. So we'll come back to Jan in a moment. Hopefully she'll come back from making her cup of tea or whatever and come back to the phone. In the meantime, we say good morning to Sue. G'day, Sue. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm very well, thank you.
How can I help?
John, I've got... my dad's got owns two schnauzer dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And over the past 3 weeks, he's been out walking them around Robina suburb, and on two occasions they've been mauled by other dogs.
Oh,
like
dear.
Staffy and,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, yesterday they think it was a bull mastiff that ran out of a garage that someone was looking after the dog, and the owners are away, and this man didn't realise that the dog was aggressive.
Mm.
Anyway, Dad and Mum had taken Molly to the vet, and as we speak, she's in surgery.
Mm.
What I want to know is, who is responsible for the bills, the vet bills, because yesterday's bill for the two dogs, because when they pulled the dog off the fur of Molly, then it attacked the other schnauzer. So the bill was $780 yesterday, and now she's having surgery this morning. Who's responsible for, you know, paying these vet bills when a dog runs from a property and attacks the dog in public like that?
Well, My immediate reaction to it, Sue, would be that the owner of the property would be liable for failing to keep the dog adequately secured. So what your parents may be able to do is to either speak to or write to the person who was looking after the dog and find out whether they have home insurance, because quite often home insurance these days includes insurance against damage caused by animals or public liability insurance for the occupier. So I would be making the claim against the owner of the property where the dog was. Now it may be that the owner will then seek reimbursement from the owner of the dog, but that is certainly where I think the claim would rest in the first instance.
Okay, terrific. Yes.
I'm not sure whether you could actually bring a claim in the small claims court in relation to that sort of a matter. I've just got in the back of my mind that you probably can, but given that your parents live in the Robina area, there is a free legal service that operates on a Thursday evening at the Robina Community Centre, which is the Gold Coast City Council Robina Community Centre. It operates between 6:30 and 8:30 p.m. on a Thursday evening. So your father and mother could possibly go over there and sit down and just go through all the facts with one of the lawyers there and just inquire whether that may be where it ultimately ends up. But my view would be that in the first instance you write to the owner of the house. Hopefully your father's got those details, and if not...
We've got all those details.
So he could write... And I would suggest that in the letter that he writes, that he actually says, look, your home insurance very well may cover you for this, so you should make inquiries of your insurer in the first instance, because if you simply write and demand payment, it might freak the person out, but if they think, it might be covered by my insurance, and hopefully it is, then that's going to provide a fairly simple solution, which is not going to involve the person looking after the dog in a huge amount of grief as well. So so that's about the only thing that I could suggest that you could do.
Okay. All right. Listen, thank you so much, John. I sincerely appreciate
your trouble
help.
At all. Okay then, Sue.
Thank you.
All the very best.
Enjoy your program.
Thank you for
you
that.
Thank you so much. Okay.
And we'll go back and see if Jan is there. Jan, are you there? Good morning. Jan, hello. No, I've got a feeling Jan may have hung up. So, Jan, if you're still listening to the program, if you ring back, unfortunately, when I went to your call, you'd obviously gone away from the phone. We could hear the radio running in the background, but you were nowhere to be heard. So if you can hear me now, Jan, ring back right now, and we should still be able to deal with your call before the end of the program at 10 o'clock. 5520888, the number, the Law and You, the program, free legal advice, but only until 10 o'clock, so you need to ring quickly. Just like George. G'day, George. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks, John.
How can we help?
I've got a dry creek in the next door boundary, down one boundary, but it's the actual creek's next door. What's the story on if that guy fills it and then when it rains, of course, the water comes straight over the top and down into my place?
Well, I don't think you can fill a water course, or if you do, then you're liable for any damage that it may cause. Obviously, the creek flows when it rains.
Only when it rains.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just a rocky little creek bed.
Yeah. So, if someone was going to look at doing something like that, my view would be that they'd have to put pipes in to make sure that they deal with the water that would otherwise come down there. You can't change the contour of the land to cause water to flow where it didn't flow before. So if that means that filling in the creek bed would cause the water to flow onto your property, then you would be entitled to seek redress against the owner. The other, I think the best way of dealing with these matters always, George, is to talk to the person and just talk through the issues. One of the things that they could possibly do would be to put a levee bank along the top edge so that the water still flows where the creek used to go, but at least, you know, if they want to grass it and make it look better, they can do that, but put a levee there so that the water doesn't then overflow onto your property.
Yeah, no, that's all fair enough. That's down the side, but when it gets to the end, the guy down there has decided he's going to block the whole lot, and he's put a sheet of fibro across the end of the creek and dug it in and put posts against it. So
it's kind of...
But he we can't talk to. The other bloke we fixed, but that guy at the bottom we can't talk to.
So what's going on? How big a block are you on?
Oh, acre and a bit.
Okay. So, well, the only thing I could suggest you do would be to speak to the council, because I don't know whether the council could take action to prevent the owner of the lower property from stopping the water course.
What happens then, of course, it just builds up to just go straight over the top once again into my place.
Yep.
There was a pipe out through there, but when he filled his part of the creek in, he buried the pipe, and so it didn't.
Right.
It used to run into the other creek. But
yeah, well, I would certainly get onto the council then in relation to it in the first instance, George. Get them to come out and take a look. They very well may make an order or deliver a directive to the owner of the lower property to say that he's got to open the water course.
They weren't real interested when I spoke to them.
Like
said, it's sort of, owner to owner sort of thing.
Right.
Nothing to do with the council.
All right. Well, my recollection is of my very first year of studying law that there was a case in relation to watercourses, and the law is that you can't interfere with a watercourse. So it may be that you and your adjoining owner, who you seem to be on reasonable terms with, should write to the person below and tell them that you require them to, to remove the obstruction to the watercourse.
What happens if we just remove it anyway?
Well, you technically can't.
It's on my other neighbour's property. It's 12 inches inside.
His property. Oh, well, if that's the case, you can simply knock it out of the road.
Thank you.
As long as you're sure where it is, if it's on your neighbour's property.
I'm dead positive. There's a white peg.
Oh, well, I've just put a sledgehammer straight through it. Sort of create a good environment with the neighbour below, but I think you certainly would be entitled to do that. It might be appropriate to tell him that if he doesn't remove it, that you're going to do so.
Well, it's a bit hard to talk to for me, and I can't talk to the other bloke at all.
Right, maybe just deliver a letter, put a letter in his letterbox.
Yeah.
All right, then.
Thank you.
Okay, all the very best. And we have Joy online. Joy, we'll have to be very quick. We've only got 2 minutes. 1 minute for you and 1 minute to sum up. How can I help?
Oh, golly.
Have you got a long query, Joy?
Well, it's about a death benefit and accidental death benefit from an insurance company.
Right.
And I'm a little bit slow to explain, that's all.
All right. Well, look, why don't you just wait on the line and I'll speak to you after the program's over, if you don't mind just hanging around there for a minute or so.
No, that's okay.
Would that be
thank
okay?
You.
All right.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, Joy, I'll be to you shortly. Well, thank you to everyone who's called in and made it such an interesting program today. As always, many and varied calls, and that's always great. We didn't hear back from Jan, but hopefully, Jan, you can ring in next week and we can solve whatever problem you may have had, if that be the case. John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. I'll look forward to being back with you with the Law and You next Tuesday morning, as always. So until then, keep safe, and as always, from me, it's a goodbye and God bless.